Today, 9/11, we mark the fifth anniversary of that very tragic day. And 5 years later, why? What happened? Why still so much division? Why so many theories? In a moment, we'll find out about one of them. I'm going to relate a couple stories throughout the evening, too, as it relates to 9/11. Here's one about a 28-year CIA career man and a former skeptic of the alternative 9/11 explanations. He's gone further than ever before in voicing his convictions that the attacks bore the hallmarks of an inside job. He says in three buildings in the WTC complex were brought down by controlled demolition. His name is Bill Christensen. He's a former senior official of the CIA. He was a national intelligence officer and director of the CIA's Office of Regional and Political Analysis before his retirement in 1979. Since then, he has written numerous articles on U.S. foreign policies, and he says, most probably destroyed by controlled demolition charges placed in the buildings, concluding that about the Twin Towers and Building 7. That is from a former CIA career man, his opinion. David Hawkins is a full member of the Scholars for the 9/11 Truth. Graduate of Cambridge University, he is the former coordinator of artificial intelligence and geoscience research. He is an inventor in the 1989 of a toolkit for virtual reality prototyping. He is the world authority on the use of applied mathematics. He is in the thermodynamics and conductive logic to analyze violent crimes and identify the weapons, opportunities, and motives of the perpetrators. He has his take, his theories on 9/11. Hello, David. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Good evening, George. Thank you for having me on your show.
Now, you would be considered an expert in the fields that you are in, and you've got a novel theory in this particular case. But tell us a little bit about yourself beyond this bio, David.
My background, I worked with a company, a very well-known French company called Schlumberger in the international oil industry. And as you mentioned there, I coordinated artificial intelligence and geoscience research at the Ridgefield Research Center in 1981. And I started to wonder about how human beings, having a lot of field experience about how experts looked at our information and interpreted whether there was oil in the oil field, I tried to understand how they put that all together, and eventually I developed a very powerful computational model and actually built systems that reasoned in ways similar to human beings when they were tracking assets through the Earth or, for that matter, just coming to 9/11. Osama bin Laden, a few weeks after 9/11, he made this extraordinary quotation that I think a lot of people have missed. He said, "We have three independent networks to move al-Qaeda assets around the world, and all the resources of the British and Americans cannot stop us." Now, I consider myself, well, I am British. When I read that in the Time magazine, the hairs on the back of my neck went up because I think in the heat of the moment, Osama bin Laden was speaking very precisely and very accurately about what the strengths and limitations of al-Qaeda were. Mm-hmm. Basically, I think he was saying, we can't do very much. We might be able to send a novice pilot who's ready to commit suicide with a few box cutters, but we're not very good at anything in particular. For example, we could take over a plane and crash it somewhere, but we wouldn't necessarily be able to crash it in the U.S. Naval Command Center in the Pentagon. So over the last 5 years, I've been trying to take my background and apply it to identifying the three independent networks that al-Qaeda used. And more particularly, and this has happened over the last 2 weeks, the center that coordinated those three networks and helped pull off the entire plot. So I think those are where my forensic economic skills, if you will, and I guess Osama bin Laden's challenges to us all. What are the three networks that he used, and how is it coordinated?
And I think what is so important here, David, is because just watching this ABC special over the last couple nights, as they were dramatizing Ramzi Youssef, and as I've also talked with a former ABC reporter, Peter Lentz, who's done a great job tracking that as well, Youssef used to say, "I can take these buildings down, but I need explosives and I need money. Without the money, none of this would have happened, would it?"
You're absolutely right. And those three networks, immediately I heard or I saw the quotation for Osama bin Laden, I said, well, what three networks would there be that all the resources of the British and the Americans could stop? So I'm starting to think, well, they're not primarily in the English language. They might be French or Arabic. But what kinds of networks would they be? Well, I think one of them, as you've just implied, would be a financial intelligence network. How do you move the huge amounts of money, and how do you exploit the great opportunity, for example, when the New York stock market closed down for 4 days? The second network, I think, George, would be an electronic intelligence network, characteristic of any major battlefield or military mission where command, control, communications, intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance have to be brought together. And the third, and perhaps the most important network, is the human intelligence network. You can't just place explosives in buildings and fire them off and expect the building to come down in a planned way. As I think you mentioned earlier, there were three towers that came down on September the 11th. One and two, well, that was a spectacular shock stuff. But building number three came down at 5:20 p.m. in its own footprint. But very interestingly, down in the debris pile of Ground Zero, the hot spot scatter of molten steel that was still burning months after 9/11,
right.
From a thermodynamic point of view, and that really talks about the level of disorder, exactly the same kind of thermodynamic signature in building number seven as in buildings one and two. So what I, as a applied mathematician or thermodynamicist, would say is, whatever it was brought down seven, and remember that wasn't a plane because no plane ever hit building, must have been added to the impact of the plane and the jet fuel fires to buildings one and two, because there was the same distribution of molten steel in the debris piles.
There was a quote attributed to Larry Silverstein, who is the property owner of the World Trade Center, who got a lot of insurance money, David, because of this. And he was overheard saying, you know, we had to pull it. We had to pull it, basically. And anybody in the demolition business knows that that means bring the building down. And I think that's one of the quotes that has had so many people who believe in an alternative reason for 9/11 have cited as the possibilities in this entire field. Would you agree?
Yes, and that's very interesting because in building number seven, I believe we have the germ of the coordination of the three networks mentioned by Osama bin Laden. Most people believe that Larry Silverstein was the owner of the property. In fact, in buildings towers one and two, what he'd actually done is he had got a mortgage for a 99-year lease from the Port Authority of New Jersey mm-hmm. and New York. And he put in a minority of the money. The bulk of the money that went into Towers 1 and 2 came through a mortgage broker called General Motors Acceptance Corporation, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of General Motors. And sitting behind that, and this is totally fascinating, I think, is, I believe, the world's largest private pension fund, which is the Teachers National Pension Fund, TIAA-CREF, which actually handles the pension fund investments of 3 million members, senior faculty members, and college employees right across the United States, including the American University of Beirut and Cairo, and I might come back to that. But quite extraordinary, the owners of the mortgage on building number 7 up to October 2000 was the Teachers National Pension Fund. And they sold it to Blackstone Group, but they retained through their private equity arm an insured interest in building number 7. And when Larry Silverstein said he pulled it, I think what he's really saying is the people who owned the mortgage on building number 7 ordered the firefighters or the demolition experts on the contractor working on that building, a British company called AMEC, they were ordered to pull it in order to collect the insurance. And subsequently, they collected $861 million of insurance, and that was shared amongst the Teachers National Pension Fund Private Equity Group.
Now, for the building to go down, for it to be pulled, for explosives to be placed in it, and let's talk primarily about Building 7, at least for this moment. I mean, they could have done it at that moment. It had to have been there from the get-go.
Well, I am an expert in explosives, and I built a lot of improvised explosive devices during my career in the oil industry, so I know a little of this subject. But I've been thinking long and hard about the alleged demolition of the three towers, because the firefighters, before the aerial of the Motorola analog radios they were equipped with was, I believe, sabotaged. They were calling in and saying, I understand, in the South Tower, we've got two small fires burning. Remember, there's black smoke. It's under control.
Right.
So now, the demolitions, if that's what they were, from the points of impact or just below the points of impact and towers 1 and 2, was a wave traveling downwards. And that can be contrasted with building number 7, which was a bottom-up demolition. So if they were placing charges, they had to be able to rearrange them very quickly on the fly to get a different pattern of demolition.
All right. Have there ever been any witnesses, David, that said, we saw explosive experts changing things, putting explosives in Building 7 at that time or even before that?
I can actually explain how there would be no witnesses. You see,
okay.
There were 7 underground levels to each of these buildings, Towers 1, 2, and 7. In Towers 1 and 2, there were elevator shafts that went up to the 78th floor of the Sky Lobby.
All right.
I think what they did, and this is a theory, and I can, if there was more time, I could go in a little more.
Oh, yeah, you're with me all hours,
yeah.
So you've got the time.
Yeah, I think what they did is they put either solid fuel or liquid fuel rocket motors inside the freight elevators at the underground level. They locked them off from public access so the public wouldn't have known that these were reserved exclusively for this purpose. And the British company AMEC, this is very interesting, it had a partnership contract with Citigroup for the diesel systems, the diesel fuel lines in building number 7. And another one of its contracts that it was getting on a regular basis from the American government was sabotage vulnerability testing.
That's interesting.
And what that means is, for example, and that is what I believe was happening on 9/11, a continuity of government exercise, a contractor that was able to organize simulated sabotage attacks would be employed to test the ability of New York State or even the American government itself to survive a sabotage attack and transfer administrative and executive and legislative and judicial functions to another order of government to prevent panic in the streets, et cetera, et cetera. And AMEC was North America's leading company in the providing of sabotage vulnerability assessments. And it was doing it for example, for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve of the United States. It was doing it, George, in the Pentagon.
So when do you think these explosives were placed in these buildings?
I think for the continuity of government exercise being staged by NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, under the Partnership for Peace program, they had rigged the buildings and the Pentagon and Logan Airport with different saboteur types. And I'm quoting that phrase, saboteur type, comes from the AMEC website. And I think prior to the Tuesday, overnight probably, they had placed these very high temperature, ultra high temperature rocket engines in the freight elevator shaft, and they had locked off the elevator shafts, and those elevators were controlled from the 23rd floor of building number 7, which was the Mayor's Office for Emergency Management, which is a public-private partnership in which AMEC was involved, and they were setting up various sabotage scenarios to determine whether or not New York State, New York City, could continue with government in the event of these sabotage simulations.
Well, these simulations, did they truly expect to detonate them?
This is the magic.
All right, we'll be back. Let's ask you that question again in just a moment. David Hawkins is our guest this hour. David, so why in God's name do you put live explosives in these buildings if it was just going to be a sabotage-type test or exercise?
Well, I think all the innocent participants would have believed, quite obviously, that the simulation was nothing more than a simulation. But you can imagine the company, this company AMEC, on the ground, and interestingly enough, Boeing in the air. Insiders of those two companies, or the people who had contracted them to do the sabotage assessment, they would have known if the defenses were stood down sufficiently for them to switch from a real continuity of government exercise with a bogus sabotage attack to a bogus continuity of government exercise and a real sabotage attack. So that's what happened. They discovered that they could get the United States Air Force to stand down on the basis the United States Air Force thought they were playing a war game and they were testing out electronic hijacking technology. And they were able to switch, actually, through the command center in Cheyenne Mountain to a real attack.
Now, when you say they, David, who might they be?
Going back up that food chain, you remember I mentioned earlier that the Teachers Private Equity Group.
Right.
Right. The Teachers is a $380 billion fund. It's the largest private pension fund in the world. In 1989, it was passed into private equity custody. And basically, a small group of people, and they described themselves as 50 prominent individuals, of which I know the names of 28. I don't know the names of the 22. They took the pension fund of the professors and faculty members of America's finest universities, and they moved into what is called alternative investment, which is real estate distressed debt, which is a nice name for loan sharking, and what's called event arbitrage. And that's a bit of a technical phrase, and it's not my area, but I've tried to get my head around it. If, for example, you're not getting sufficient rent to pay the mortgage on building number 7, one way of getting your money back is to insure it, knock it down.
Right.
Okay? Equally, with Towers 1 and 2, the North and South Towers, they weren't full of tenants. They were older buildings. People were moving out to different areas, you know, following the dot-com magic. You can stay at home and click on the machine, etc. And so one way of getting your money back on the 99-year lease at $3.2 billion was to insure the hell out of it, knock it over, and collect, unbelievably, George, they collected a double occurrence.
But to knock it over, you need a real excuse, or you're charged with arson, right?
Exactly. And that's where, my phrase that I've sent to you separately, this manufactured shock. There were three stages to the explosions that destroyed the building. The first one was the visual shock when the planes flew into the buildings and created the fireball, and everyone was extremely impressed. But the mere fact that that fireball went out into the open air means it wasn't available to heat the steel inside the building. So there was actually very little energy left to heat the steel, right? And in the particular case of the South Tower, the flame started burning black smoke, which means not enough oxygen is getting to it, so it's probably around 600 to 700 degrees Fahrenheit. Steel melts at 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. When those towers came down, if you look at the ejection velocity of the girders that are blown out sideways, they're blown out at about 100 miles an hour. Well, George, gravity doesn't do that.
All right. In your theory of a plan to get insurance money,
yes.
Where does Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda fit in?
Osama bin Laden... there's a very well-known Canadian. Actually, he's not terribly well-known. A guy called Maurice Strong, who helped set up the UN Oil for Food scam. He's a Canadian guy. He was the senior advisor to the president of the World Bank. And he hates Anglosphere and the America. And he said in 1981, it was for a story he's going to write, the greatest threat to the survival of the planet are the rich industrialized countries. We have a duty to destroy them. And the way we would do that, we would take a position in the international stock markets and commodities, and we would hire mercenaries, and we would cause a panic. And al-Qaeda are hired mercenaries.
I agree with that.
All right? I don't say that al-Qaeda doesn't exist, but remember what bin Laden said at the beginning of this interview. He said, we have three independent networks to move our assets around. It's a cowboy outfit. You know, they can wield a box cutter, maybe an AK-47, set up a little explosive. But 9/11 was a brilliantly coordinated military project. Remember, there were three crime scenes, including buildings 1 and 2, which we saw because the planes hit them. But building 7 is part of the 9/11 scenario. On floors 11, 12, and 13 were the offices of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and all the investigations into the dot-com scandals, including WorldCom, run by Citigroup, for which Citigroup has paid $3.4 billion, was vaporized, George.
All the records gone.
Gone, right? The chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, Arthur Levitt, he resigned in May 2001. He became senior advisor to the Carlyle Group. The following year, he became the overseer of the Teachers National Pension Fund.
So your theory is that this fund hires Al-Qaeda, masterminds this incredible act, and it's all for a scam to make money.
No, there are two objectives, George. Going back to the arbitraged event, if you recollect, the New York Stock Exchange closed down for 4 days.
Right.
But the Chicago Mercantile Exchange on the futures market continued running.
Why is that?
Now, the reason they wanted the New York Stock Exchange to close down is when you are arbitraging, for example, and you're long in New York and you're short in Chicago Mercantile Exchange, what that means is you've got a lot of Enron stock on your hands and you need to crash the stock and sell it short. But you can only make money if the traders in New York have stopped trading, because as soon as they see that arbitrage gap grow, they get into it, right?
I see.
And the only way you can make serious arbitrage profits in a dot-com bubble market, because they all knew that Enron and Dynegy and Quest and WorldCom and Tyco were about to burst, is to shut down the New York Stock Exchange. So they needed, and my phrase is, to manufacture a shock in New York.
Absolutely.
And make their profits in Chicago.
And I assume they did make those profits?
Oh, totally. And the guys who made the profits, the guys who made the biggest profits, were CAI, which I think is an anagram for CIA, but I'll come back to that. The CAI Private Equity Group, which manages and invests the Teachers National Pension Fund on behalf of senior faculty members across America.
Why is it that the Securities and Exchange Commission never revealed to us who made those short sales of insurance companies and airlines that day as well?
Now, we're moving on to the third network. Remember I mentioned three networks, or mm-hmm. Osama bin Laden mentioned three networks. The first network, I believe, is the financial network, which is the Teachers Private Equity Group. The second network is the NATO command and control system that I believe was used to control the military assets. And I can gamble that. The third asset is the mob. Now, very interesting. You remember I mentioned this company, AMEC, that got the job for testing the saboteur types that
yes.
would be most successful.
Who paid them for this, by the way?
I think the Teachers Private Equity Group.
Okay.
I think they were retained privately.
All right.
As was Boeing. When they come to the scene of the crime afterwards, guess who gets the contract, George, to clean up?
The mob.
AMEC. Right? And the first guy on the scene.
And they clean it up pretty fast, too, don't they?
Yes, because three groups of people showed up the day of or the day after. And you'd think there'd be the yellow tapes around. It would be scene of crime. It wasn't. Teamsters Local 813, which was the New York Sanitation Department, showed up and turned the hoses on and started flushing the body bits into the sewers. Waste Management Incorporated got to operate the meshes to see which body parts would go through. Well, that is a George Soros investment. And it turns out that AMEC employed a reputed boss of the Lucchese crime family to take it out to Fresh Kills Landfill.
Okay, now let's step back just a little bit, David, because it is well known that we were aware that these fundamentalists were training, were trying to get their pilot's license, were trying to get schooled in flight. We know that bin Laden had a hatred for the United States, that he was financing terror. All that was real. All
yes.
that happened, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. But look at the flying skills of these guys. The instructors said they can barely fly a Cessna.
True.
Right? These guys, Hani Hanjour, who is allegedly in Flight 77, he executed a 270-degree pivoted turn from 7,000 feet to ground zero, about 10 feet above the Pentagon lawn, 540 miles an hour, in 2.5 minutes, and he went through the first floor window, and it wasn't wedge one under construction. Guess what was the other side? It was the U.S. Naval Command Center, George.
That's strange. Okay, why mastermind the other two hijackings, the reported one that hit the Pentagon, and then the crash in the Pennsylvania, a plane that they thought was going to go for the White House or the Capitol?
Okay, that was going to hit the Capitol, and it would have decapitated the American administration, because Flight 93, which is the one that allegedly came down in the field outside Shanksylvania, was 41 minutes late, George. Had it left on time, it would have been over Washington at exactly the same moment as Flight 77.
All right, were those two diversions to take away from the World Trade Center financial hit?
No. The World Trade Center was primarily iconic to destroy American capitalism and make that money, you know, with
make the money
with,
doing
make
it.
The money. The Pentagon and the Capitol, these were political objectives.
So this group was truly out to destroy America.
Yes, it was. Remember what Maurice Strong said, and I believe Maurice Strong is one of the 50 people in the Teachers Private Equity Group. He said, America represents the greatest threat to the survival of the planet. Actually, he said the rich industrialized countries. We will take a position in the international stock markets. We will hire mercenaries. We will cause a panic, and we will jam open the market.
Where did he say this?
He said it in 1991 to a Western Star reporter about a story that he would like to write, right? Unfortunately, this clown went on to become the architect of the U.S., the United Nations oil for food scam.
Why isn't our government publicly investigating this other than the push for terrorism and the chase of Al-Qaeda?
They've half gone after him because they've indicted a guy called Tong Sung Park, who is the colleague of Maurice Strong, who carried a million-dollar bribe from Saddam Hussein in Baghdad via Dammam in Jordan. It was wired through to New York, and it was sent up to Canada, and it was invested in the then finance minister of Canada's Canada Steamship Lines. And I believe Maurice Strong bought Saddam Hussein a ticket for the 9-1-1 war games.
Well, why are we not publicizing it? Why are we merely talking about the war on terror when there may be a bigger problem here?
Because I can't get through to the people who matter. But tonight is a big night for me, George, and because I've got through to you, and I think because we've got a lot of listeners, I believe and I hope and I pray that the research and discoveries that I've made, I think now will have some momentum.
Well, David, I have always said that when anything happens, follow the money, see
exactly.
Who profits.
Exactly.
And in this particular case, I've always wondered, and I've said on this program before, that there is no doubt in my mind that Al-Qaeda was part of this. I mean, a lot of people will claim that they were not. Truly, they were. The evidence is there that they tried. But I've always said that bin Laden was a hired hitman.
Yes. Can I mention the gyroscopes, if we've got time?
Sure.
Okay. Boeing has recently, I believe this year, paid the largest corporate fine in history, $615 million.
For what?
To get the U.S. Department of Justice to drop its investigations into about 14 years of illegal modifications and procurement fraud. All right? One of those modifications, which is absolutely germane to the events of 9-1-1, is the installation of a gyro chip in the avionics of Boeing 737s. And the gyro chip is a military gyroscope that is also used, for example, in Raytheon's Maverick missile. Now, here's what I think happened with Flight 11. Well, let's take Flight 77 because it's more spectacular. When the group of planes involved in the NORAD war games got over the Pentagon or Washington, D.C., the United States Air Force base commanders believed they had control of those decoy hijackers through the gyro chip inside the avionics and Boeing's military satellite communication systems. I believe those gyro chips and the avionics had been backdoored so they could actually block out the United States Air Force base commanders, and the planes could then be flown around the gyroscope, just like a missile, into the first floor of the Pentagon, where it killed Captain Gerald DeConto, who was the duty officer for the U.S. Navy Command Center.
So you believe a plane indeed hit the Pentagon?
Absolutely.
Not a missile?
Absolutely. But it looked like a passenger plane, right?
Right.
And it may have been part of a convoy where there was a decoy hijacker in front, etc., because with the Boeing satellite communication system, they could patch in voices from three or four different planes and present it as a single voice log, if you see what I mean.
Well, what happened to the occupants of what was supposed to have been that flight?
I think they were in it, probably. I think they were in it.
All right.
But the plane had been modified, unbeknown, quite possibly, to Hani Hanjour, who was flying the plane, because I think Hani Hanjour There were two kinds of hijackers. You remember you mentioned Ramzi Youssef?
Yes.
In the 1993? Ramzi Youssef was what was described as an expert terrorist, and
right.
the other guys were the expendables.
Yes,
right?
No doubt.
On those hijackings, there was an expert or a semi-expert who knew the language of flying, etc., but the muscle hijackers who wielded the box cutters, they didn't even speak English. They were parachuted in from Saudi Arabia.
I've always thought that other than the pilots, if there were pilots now, that the rest of the hijackers probably didn't think they were going to be dead. They probably thought something else was going to happen.
I think it's the other way around. I think the expert hijacker, the Mohammed Atta, believed he was testing this electronic hijacking system, right, and pretending to be a hijacker. I don't think he knew that the muscle hijackers in the first-class compartment had the box cutters, and I think they killed him as well. And then the plane, instead of crashing arbitrarily, was being flown remotely through the Boeing Iridium satellite communication system and the gyro chip installed inside the avionics.
What an incredible theory, David.
Absolutely.
But
that's how
incredible.
You get the trajectory of the plane, which was way beyond the talents of the abilities of the people who were sitting in the cockpit.
How long was this thing planned?
I think it started before the 1993 attack. I think the people who carried out the 1993 attack carried out 9/11. And I think you've got three networks inside the United States, which Al-Qaeda was using back in 1989-1990. Let me just give you a quick insight into what Al-Qaeda is. Al-Qaeda is the name the CIA has given to its database of special weapons and tactics teams operating in the Middle East. Al-Qaeda in Arabic means base in English. And that database appears to have been stolen in 1995 or 1996 by the then director of the CIA, John Deutsch, who was pardoned by President Clinton on the 31st of January of 2001. And John Deutsch is the professor of chemistry at MIT, and he's an expert on explosive hydrodynamics, which happens to be my area of expertise as well. And what you can do, George, with explosive hydrodynamics is you can hit a solid object like a steel girder or a human body with a shock wave traveling at five times the speed of sound at a temperature of around 5,500 degrees, and it turns into a plasma.
And down it goes.
And down it goes. And there is no evidence of murder and arson and fraud down in the debris pile of Building 1, 2, and 7. And if there is any remaining pieces, the Lucchese crime family and the Teamsters and Waste Management Inc. will take it out and put it under Garbage Hills 1 and 9 of the Fresh Kills landfill on Staten Island. They'll flog the steel or what remains of the steel to Indian and Chinese smelters, and they'll recycle it and they'll share the profits amongst them all.
My God, David, what a theory. What a theory. Well, thank you for sharing that.
It's a pleasure, John.
And that is a different perspective than anything we've heard. I'll be back in a moment because we still have another theory on Coast to Coast AM. Victor Thorne, Lisa Giuliani, the co-hosts of Wing Television, which is a daily online television and radio show. Victor Thorne is the founder of the Boyd Victor Sisyphus Press, I hope I got that right, and the author of such books as The New World Order Exposed, 9/11 on Trial, and the recently released 9/11 Evil. Lisa Giuliani is also the author of The New World Order Illusion and The Hunters of the Soul. They are the co-authors of Phantom Flight 93, which deals with the Shanksville crash. They returned this afternoon from Ground Zero, New York City, where the fifth anniversary of 9/11 was being commemorated. They are our guests this half hour on Coast to Coast. Victor and Lisa, hi there.
How you doing, George?
Good,
thanks for
Victor.
Having us on.
Hi, Lisa. George. Did I get that right, the name of your press?
Sisyphus.
How do you pronounce that?
Sisyphus.
I came close.
You're real good. Better than most.
Hey, tell me about Ground Zero today. What was the feeling out there when you
It was quite a bit different. We were up there last year for the fourth anniversary, and I would say there was only, at best, about two dozen people that were actual 9/11 truth seekers. This year there were hundreds, maybe even bordering on 1,000. So it's you know, tenfold, a hundredfold from last year, and it was just great to see this much renewed interest or increasing interest in 9/11 Truth.
We were very proud of the large attendance of 9/11 Truth Seekers at Ground Zero. We were very gratified.
Yeah, and George, I know there's a lot of new people to this movement or just finding out, and a lot of them ask, well, where can we find good information? I just like to guide everyone, if they go to our homepage at www.wingtv.net, we listed what we feel are the best books and videos over the last 5 years, and I think it's a real good starting point for those people that are just new to this movement or having their eyes open. So I think that's a good place to start.
If you believe polls, it is growing. According to MSNBC, now some 44% of the people polled there believe that either the government was aware of what was happening with 9/11 or some of them were even a part of it. 43% said no way. Another 14% said we simply don't know. Why do you both feel at least those numbers are going up?
Well, because the truth matters, and this because of the internet and because of so many good 9/11 researchers and so many people in the alternative media, we're getting this information out there to a wider audience. And we're just talking today at Ground Zero that with the Kennedy assassination, this took, you know, a decade for this kind of information to get out this widespread, where now it's only taken 5 years, and it's just a testament to so many people who want the truth in what is the greatest terrorist attack ever against this country.
Right, and people are losing faith with the mainstream media and have lost considerable faith in the government.
You know, a lot of us have our own theories on what we think happened, who might have been involved, and, you know, maybe all of us may have pieces that are right. Maybe all of us are wrong. I don't know. But in your particular case, what happened after 9/11 for both of you to start saying, I don't think this is the version, something is different here? What were the episodes?
Well, I mean, with me, it was literally from day one. I have a good buddy out in Los Angeles that emailed me the morning of 9/11 and already was laying out some of the facts that didn't add up in comparison to what he was seeing and hearing in regard to the government's official version of events. So this was, for me anyways, and shortly thereafter for Lisa, we started publishing articles about 2 months after 9/11. So right from the start, there was a core group of people that realized that what we were being told wasn't the whole story.
David Hawkins was just on right before both of you. His theory is there was some kind of insurance scam involved and also a way to try to bring down the government of the United States. Part of that could be accurate. Maybe all of it is accurate. I don't know. I guess both of you in your research also showed that somebody somewhere made a lot of money on this thing.
Well, we heard what he said, and I don't know how much I buy the entire scenario, but in the latest book we put out, George, 9/11 Evil, and this is a very taboo subject, but what we really cover is something that almost nobody in the mainstream media covers and almost nobody in the alternative media, and that's Israel's central role in the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And, you know, if you'd ask 100 people on the street who were the first individuals arrested after 9/11, I'll bet you 99 would say, well, Arabs were. But in reality, the first people arrested after 9/11 within hours were Israelis, and these were the infamous dancing Israelis. And if we have some time, I'd like to just cover this briefly because it's one of the most taboo subjects, but I think central to really who was involved in this whole terrorist attack.
We've got a few moments for that. Those were the people who were in a white van?
Correct. Right. Yeah, they were first seen celebrating on a roof in Weehawken, New Jersey. Then they were pulled over in a van, and it ends up that even though they're posing as art students, they were really employed by Israeli military and or Israeli intelligence. And here's what they found, George. They found $4,700 in cash on them, box cutters, maps to New York City monuments, foreign passports, plus bomb-making materials right in this van. And when they brought in the bomb-sniffing dogs, they found explosive materials. And their names were also in these FBI counterintelligence databases. And the Bergen Record even said that there was evidence found linking them to a bomb plot. So that's just the tip of the iceberg.
And they were ultimately released.
Yeah, and Michael Chertoff, who was then in the Department of Justice, who has a dual Israeli-American citizenship, was the one ultimately responsible for freeing them. And when you find all of this evidence there, why would we release these people. Mm-hmm. And when they were asked then after they went back to Israel, they were on an Israeli television show, they were asked, well, what were they doing on this roof in New Jersey with a camera filming this? And they said that they were there to document the event. Now ask yourself, everybody listening tonight, how many people on the morning of September 11th even knew there was going to be an event to document, yet they said they were sent there to document this event?
Right, that indicates foreknowledge.
Of course, then again, there might have been a lot of people with foreknowledge who didn't want us to know what was going on.
Right, and you know, one other thing, then they worked for a company called Urban Moving Systems, where they were also on the FBI suspect list for being involved in terrorist attacks. And American intelligence in March of 2002 said that Urban Moving Systems that employed the dancing Israelis were actually a front for the Mossad. So right there we just have example after example after example linking these individuals to 9/11, yet it's been virtually untouched by everybody,
right,
that there's been research in this.
Or even brought up.
Right.
And George, I have to say, if we can discuss the Muslim role, the supposed Muslim role in 9/11, we can discuss the Christian role in 9/11, we should be able to discuss this role as well.
Well, I think you should discuss all the roles,
right,
because
exactly.
Everybody had a specific motive for this. Everybody gained in some form or fashion. As a matter of fact, the former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made a blunder when he was asked about the attacks. His first quick reply was, he said it was good, and then he quickly said, well, it's not good, but it would generate immediate sympathy.
Well, let me add two more to that. There's a guy named Ehud Sprizak, who's a terrorist expert at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and he said, from the perspective of Israelis, it is the most important public relations act ever committed in our favor. Plus, a guy named Ami Ayalon, who's the head of the Israeli military, said that since September 11th, our leaders have been euphoric. Now, George, who is euphoric? Who's ever been euphoric about 9/11? And for Netanyahu and these other two individuals to make those kind of statements, not only is it cold-hearted and evil, but there's definitely an interest in this.
And add to that, Larry Silverstein is linked to Ariel Sharon and Benjamin Netanyahu.
Right. And he's the one who had the lease on the buildings.
Right.
Correct.
All right. Now, it's also, though, entirely possible that these five who were arrested could have been working, could have been contract hirees, right? Possibility?
Well, oh, absolutely. For somebody in, I would say, the Mossad or the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force. But, when they flee back to Israel, when they have Michael Chertoff releasing them, who has a dual Israeli-American citizenship, that what's really the problem, I think, George, is that a lot of people that investigate 9/11 want it to stop at Bush-Cheney. It's Bush-Cheney, and it ends there. Or a lot of people say it's this shadowy New World Order. You know, it's the New World Order, but it's kind of like Orwell's perpetual enemy. You can never really pinpoint the New World Order, someone vague. And what we're doing here is saying that 9/11 was not only an inside job, meaning that when it comes to our government, it was the Israeli firsters, the neocons, so we all know the names of Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz down the line, but also the Israeli government. So it's an inside-outside job.
Interesting that this theory would come up. Do you also believe, though, that bin Laden and al-Qaeda played a role in this, or do you think not?
First of all,
let me say this. The FBI is not looking for Osama bin Laden related to 9/11.
That's true.
They said that there was no evidence.
Hasn't been charged with anything yet.
Right, and they also even went further and said there's not been any evidence linking him. And some of the statements in 9/11 Evil that Osama bin Laden made initially after 9/11 gives a completely different portrait, where he's pointing the finger and saying the United States government has been taken over. There's a shadow government behind them, and it all leads back to Israel. So, as Lisa said, we should be able to investigate all angles.
And let the chips fall where they may.
And maybe they were all part of this.
Well, the way I see al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden is the way I see the Kennedy assassination. They were very convenient, Lee Harvey Oswald.
Well, I don't know. Some of the things, Victor, I've seen coming out on videotape, unless it was all made up or doctored.
How do we know the videotape is real?
Yeah, there's a guy named Vinny Sammartino who's research all these different videotapes, and I mean, there's a different actor playing them in everyone, George.
There's several versions of Osama on video.
Yeah, you have the fat Osama, the
gaunt,
skinny Osama,
right.
the one with the short nose, the one with the big nose, and I mean, it's just the light-skinned one, the darker skin. I mean, it's just preposterous how many different Osamas they've been catering before us, yet nobody seems to be pointing it out.
Did you happen to see the ABC miniseries?
No, for the last week and a half,
we've been traveling
all down to D.C. and doing interviews and up to New York, so we've been on the road for quite a bit.
Let's take a few moments while we have to talk about Flight 93.
I'm glad you brought that up.
I just read a story in my first hour that Cheney basically admitted that he and the president had the right, authority to shoot down the plane, which I think makes it even more suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a plane that crashed, but parts were scattered over, 5 to 8 miles?
Yes, and we went down to Shanksville earlier this year, and the theory we have in a nutshell is that Flight 93 didn't hit in Shanksville, but instead it was a missile that was shot there to create a diversion so that the actual crash site they could go. They had that cordoned off, the FBI and the Pennsylvania State Police, and that it flew over Indian Lake and then went into New Baltimore.
Yeah, we think it was shot down. Whatever flew over, something purporting to be Flight 93 was shot down over Indian Lake, Pennsylvania.
By the way, I don't, as tragic as it is, if we truly knew that it was hijacked and was headed for the White House or the Capitol or any other target, sadly enough, I think we had to shoot it down.
And you know what, George, that's a valid point, and I don't disagree with you for a second, but why can't our government just tell us the truth?
I agree with that.
So many lies, not only with 9/11, but post 9/11, that what we have is this culture of deception that is never ending.
When you were out there at Ground Zero, did you pick up a mood? Of course, it was somber. You know, we're here to honor the dead in this very horrible tragedy. But, you know, there are policemen out there, firemen out there, I'm sure, also paying their respects. Did anybody talk about any of this out there?
Well, last year it was starting that it was a much more intense feel last year because there was more negativity directed towards people trying to hold up banners and so forth. But when we were leaving Ground Zero, there were police officers actually giving us the thumbs up even last year. So they have, you know, their hands tied in a lot of regards.
Yeah, I've heard that from other people, too,
right,
that were out there today, that, I mean, the police officers and the firemen they want the answers, too, to this thing.
Well, there are a lot more of us out there today.
Are we ever going to get the answers, Victor and Lisa?
Well, Lisa makes a good point that there's no official... We have no official body right now to...
Let's put it this way, okay? This plane, Flight 93, supposedly resulted in a crater approximately 10 feet wide, 10 feet long, 12 feet deep, no visible wreckage. There's not enough burnt area for the fuel supposedly consumed. There's a list of anomalies longer than my leg.
Yeah, well, what I was trying to get at is that when it comes to the official truth, we can have 100, it's like the Kennedy assassination. Everybody knows it didn't happen the way the government said, but if you get a speeding ticket, George, there's an official sanctioning body that can put the clamps on you and bring you to justice.
Right.
You know, and if you don't pay it, throw you in jail.
We have no compelling authority.
No.
If we do get the truth, who's going to punish these people and hold them accountable?
Why are we so polarized on this? Why would we have 40-some percent of the people say, you two are right on, thumbs up, keep doing. Then you get another 40% that says you're nuts, you know, stop talking about this, you know, you're killing our government. And then you got that other handful of people who simply say, I don't know. This thing split right down the middle.
I think it's a reflection of our country.
Right.
If you look at, you know, red state, blue state, it's a reflection.
Well, the people who watch the mainstream media believe and get their information from those venues. And then within the alternative media, you've got people who aren't necessarily working toward the truth.
You've been at this now for what, the 5 years that this has been going on?
I mean, literally from day one, yeah.
When do you stop?
Well, I don't see any end in sight for us.
When will they stop?
Yeah. I mean, I guess when they tell us the truth is when we'll stop. And it's too important, George, not only for what happened that morning, but what's happening afterwards. Really what 9/11 has become, it's become the equivalent of Orwell's perpetual war. It's an ever-ready excuse for, I mean, George Bush just said this is the war for the rest of the century. I mean, this could go on forever if they wanted to, and it all leads back to 9/11.
The people behind 9/11 and all of these other various covered-up atrocities, the wars that followed, are all psychopaths. They have no conscience, and they will keep doing it. Power is not going to concede unless it's forced to do so.
And, George, we love this country, and I was talking to someone at Ground Zero today, and even as much as we distrust our government, I said, you know what? In a lot of countries in the world, we wouldn't be allowed to do what we're doing today.
Oh, no, that's absolutely true.
And we should all remember that we have this freedom of expression, and we better use it while we can.
All right, Victor and Lisa, both of you, thanks. Your website, wingtv.net. Good luck on the jobs you two do.
Thank you very much, George.
And I'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM, offering different views and perspectives tonight on people who have been looking at this for a long time. And like I said, the polarization is right down the middle. I mean, I'm getting my fast blasts from 50% of the people think that something is very seriously wrong here with this situation. And, you know, keep up the investigation. And then there's another half of that people just don't want to hear this anymore. They just want to stop hearing this. And they don't believe that there's anything else that has happened. It's the 9/11 Commission version, and that's the way it is. And again, I think as Victor so accurately said, it's important, at least in this country, that regardless of how you feel, you have a right to feel that way. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Alex Jones, award-winning documentary filmmaker, political researcher, his news websites, Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, are at the forefront of the alternative media. Alex is recognized by many as the father of the 9/11 truth movement, being one of the first to question the government's official story. His newest film, Martial Law 9/11, Rise of the Police State, Detailing 9/11 Revelations. He was at Ground Zero in New York. Good morning, Alex.
George, I miss talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
How are you? My pleasure. Tell me, what were things like out there for you?
It was amazing. It was historic. There were over 2,000 9/11 truthers out there today, and we led a silent march earlier this morning during the period of time when the planes hit while they were reading the names. That happened this morning. So at the time that the planes hit 5 years ago today, now in some time zones yesterday, we were there, and then we had the, quote, permit to have a, quote, sound device, so I was able to bullhorn for several hours later in the afternoon, and it was just, it was amazing, and there's been a total shift. 2 years ago, I was here at Ground Zero, and I'd have to say about half the police, maybe 25% of the firemen, didn't like 9/11 truthers. Now, the police literally rolled out the red carpet, even on video, because I had four different camera crews of my own there. The police on tape were saying, we believe you, we want an investigation, we know there's a cover-up. All of the firemen had now educated themselves. They're like, yeah, we know Bin Laden's CIA, we know about Operation Northwoods, we checked it out, and it was incredible. There were a few people there, I would say the vast minority, that were screaming and cussing at us or grabbing on us, and the police would quickly back them away. And, of course, then Bill Doyle, the head of the biggest 9/11 victims group, has now gone public saying that he believes clearly the evidence shows that 9/11 is an inside job. And I talked to him a few weeks ago. He said that most of the members of his big 9/11 group, the folks that tried to sue Saudi Arabia and were blocked by George Bush and James Baker from doing it, and there is a clear connection there, but it's at a mid-level, they were blocked. So he now believes that the evidence clearly shows it's an inside job. And we have Bill Christensen, of course, ran an entire division of the CIA, one of the highest-level people to go public, saying clearly all the evidence shows an inside job. So there is a cascading effect here, and I brought up the victims' families. because you know, the controlled mainstream press was all day was throwing the same pitch. Hey, listen, maybe some of the families don't like it. And I would say, listen, regardless, even if they didn't and were ignorant, we're sad for them, but this is a crime that affects us all. 9/11 is being used to take our freedoms, and so we're here to expose it. We're here to speak out against it. But then I would just point out the polls that have come out, and I would point out the fact that the families have gone public. And I had a lot of the family members, victims, emergency workers come up and hug me, come up and hug us and tell us thank you. So, again, the majority now believe 9/11 is an inside job. And, of course, we have the polls. We have a Zogby poll, 68% believe there's a cover-up, 42% believe inside job. Scripps Howard News Service, 36% believe inside job. Even higher numbers than that believe in a cover-up. And one of the big shifts, and a lot of police would talk on camera, which was amazing. I mean, I had police captains smiling at me, and I'd say, what do you think about Operation Northwoods? I've looked at it. Thanks for what you're doing. Keep investigating. We were wearing black T-shirts that said investigate 9/11. And it was just amazing. But one of the big reasons they're really awake now is that, of course, we've been reporting on this for 5 years, that about 40 stories of the two buildings combined literally just disappeared. That's what percentage they've calculated turned into, quote, pulverized dust. And they were built out of course, asbestos. There was mercury. There was lead. There was the concrete, all very, very toxic concrete full of lime. And when all of this got aerosolized, that huge shower thousands of feet in the air that went all over Manhattan and blew into New Jersey and the Bronx and everywhere else, when all of that happened, the EPA immediately showed up in hazmat outfits. They're people in total head-to-toe basic spacesuits almost, earth suits. They showed up and but told the firefighters, police, emergency workers, the military, the nearby schools, hey, reopen. Everything's fine. This dust is completely normal. The air quality is normal. And it turns out, of course, it's not just that the government was wrong or ignorant or didn't know. Now the documents have been released by the city of New York that had seen them. The feds are having to admit that they knew it was totally deadly, and they went ahead and didn't get the proper breathing equipment and just literally didn't care. And then Christina Todd Whitman was ordered.
Well, let me ask you this, Alex. Let me get a few words in here with you.
Oh, sure. I'm running on here. Thank you.
And just want to let you know that you are constantly in our minds, and you do a great job following up on things. But I mean, are you saying, when you say it's an inside job? I mean, do you not believe that Al Qaeda and Bin Laden had anything to do with this?
Well, George, I would love some nights to just do a 9/11 program and be able to run through that, and I can break down how it was all done. And it's just monstrous. It's all cloak and dagger. It's so huge.
Yeah, but tell me about the Bin Laden tie-in. You don't believe it happened?
Let me be clear. Al Qaeda, known as Al Qaeda, is a creation. Okay, Zbigniew Brzezinski, former national security advisor, founder of the Trilateral Commission, brags that he created what today is al-Qaeda, that actually started the war with the Russians in Afghanistan. The Senate Report 99 admits that the war on Serbia was started by al-Qaeda, funded by the United States. They attacked the Serbs. When the Serbs fought back against al-Qaeda, LCIADA, then we demonized them, went over and attacked them and leveled them and used depleted uranium on them. And I believe Ahmadinejad actually works for the New World Order. Iran is controlled by the New World Order. And I've done so much research, George, we haven't done a show on this. And just the sophistication, the diabolical levels to all of this, it's the very same Muslim extremists were used in 53.
But you believe there are Muslim extremists out there who hate us?
Yes, but they are wind-up toys.
They may be.
Of the New World Order, and they are controlled, and all of this is emanating out of the bowels of Western intelligence agencies, period. And by the way, George, it's absolutely free. My new film, Terror Storm, that I spent a year making, we uploaded it the first day to Google Video, so people just go to Google Video later, tomorrow, next week, whenever, and they type in Terror Storm. I made an $85,000 film, a lot of money for me. and I just put it out for free. That's how important it is. Terror Storm, right at 2 hours long, and it details the history of government-sponsored terrorism. Iran had an elected pro-America government, but they weren't going to let British Petroleum have all of the oil at the time, you know, Anglo-American oil. And so what happened is, this is all declassified, they sent in CIA commander Kermit Roosevelt, who hired the mullahs, the Ayatollah Khomeini's predecessors, and Kermit Roosevelt personally, and he's gone public. He wrote a book about it. He's very proud of it before he died in 99, and he went on national radio and the rest of it. They brag about it. The state's terror attacks all over Iran, blamed it on Mohammad Mossadegh, and then they put the Shah in, and then later in 79, they flew Ayatollah Khomeini in and put him into place. Then they had the Iran-Contra deal with him, staging all of that with the hostages and the arms deals. Again, it's the same story. Our government then sent $45 million through Bill Clinton in 1997 to then start and fund the KLA, Kosovo Liberation Army, to attack the Serbs. And so I'm sick of hearing, you know, the fake conservatives who are out there on TV and radio everywhere who then, you know, come out and say, well, see, we've got this huge threat, the Muslim fascists are going to get us, you know, the Islamo-fascists. But they never want to talk about these historical facts. Where is this emanating? You know, it's just like our government, along with the British government, it's mainstream news, funded and created Hitler. They create these people to then knock them down while at the same time taking our freedoms. That's the point. There's several levels, as you know, George, of sophistication above all of this. So I don't deny that there's this threat and this stuff is happening. The point is, you know, who is directing it? Mm-hmm. That's the key.
Well, I agree with that. I think, you know, I've always said, as you know, Alex, that bin Laden is a hired hitman. I've been saying it all night.
I know. And George, your courage in the last 4 years has really energized 9/11 Truth. And you have given sophisticated analysis, multi-level analysis. You've given not both sides, but dozens of different angles from every level of the strata. And so for people that tune into your show, they're able to get that when you do the serious, you know, shows where you get into all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, you know, people say, well, what do you think of George Norrie? What do you think of what he's saying? You know, one day he's got you on, next day he's got somebody else on saying something completely different. And really you're not. You're taking people through the different angles.
The different possibilities and trying to give everyone who does not believe in the cookie-cutter version an opportunity to express their views and why they feel that way.
Well, no, that's really it. You just hit it. The official story is a fraud end to end. The 9/11 Commission was not independent. It was appointed by Bush. And again, Bush himself is a puppet in all of this. This is, everybody knows, presidents are just frontmen these days. And so people need to understand that 9/11 Truth is the key, because we are losing our freedoms. 9/11 is being used to turn us into a police state. We told people that the dust was deadly poisonous. We were called conspiracy theorists. Now it's all over the New York papers that it was totally documented. The government knew and just didn't care about the firefighters and blocked the funding for them to get treatment. I've had dinner with, I've given speeches with in the last 3 days here in New York with firefighters, military people, police, who literally are coughing up blood while you're talking to them. They're dying. All the rescue dogs have now died. They've got asbestosis. Mount Sinai's done the test. It is so horrible to see that happen. So they're now starting to wake up. But 9/11 Truth transcends left and right. We warned everybody about the North American Union. You did years ago. Now Lou Dobbs talks about it. Now CNN talks about it. Now major publications discuss it. Now Jerome Corsi's discovered it and gotten a lot of attention. I was talking about it 10 years ago from documents getting laughed at. We only cover what's really happening. I mean, how many Americans still don't know that last March the deal was signed to get rid of the United States and we are now in the North American Union? Well, your listeners know, but that's about it.
Yeah.
How many people know that they're putting cancer viruses in the vaccines? How many people know there's mercury in them? How many people know that there is a diabolical elite that wants to reduce our population and bring in a one-world government? I mean, that's why I made Terror Storm and put it out for free at Google Video. all I want people to do is go see the new film and learn the full magnitude of what we're facing, because my passion lies in just getting the truth out, and I only go where the truth is. And believe me, folks, I wish this wasn't true on this fifth anniversary. I wish, I mean, it is so painful to me. It is frightening. It is terrifying. It is horrifying to know that we are under the gun at such an incredibly dangerous level. But it's even more dangerous to live in denial and to not admit to ourselves just how far things have gone. I mean, 9/11 is a war against freedom. The war on terror is a war against our liberties and our freedoms. I mean, even if you believe the official story of 9/11, our government has done nothing to secure the borders. They're actually less secure than they were. And they've done everything they can to butcher the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. And I love this country, and that's why I talk about these hard facts, George.
I'll tell you what, Alex, all the guests that I've had on in the past, all of you may have the answer, either in pieces or in total. Maybe not at all.
It's a puzzle.
But I think it's a puzzle, and I think you all have pieces of the puzzle. Some of you may have five pieces. The other people may have three. But eventually, maybe we're going to see the entire picture.
Well, exactly. 5 years later, the puzzle's gotten a lot clearer. I mean, the entire puzzle is not filled in, but it's getting down to the last 20 or 30 pieces, and this is a big jigsaw. It's getting closer and closer and closer, and the picture is getting clearer and clearer and clearer. And that's why 5 years later, I mean, on camera, I would say, excuse me, will you say that again? And I'd swing a camera around, and there'd be a police captain, you know, in official dress uniform saying, yeah, we know something's going on. Keep investigating. Yeah, we know. We know you're right. There has been a total, George, total shift. I was blown away by it. I mean, these polls show a majority of Americans think there's a cover-up, and a majority of that majority believe it's an inside job. But to see almost all the firemen, one fireman did flip us off, but he was from New Jersey and wasn't involved in the disaster. We talked to him. But I mean, I probably talked to over 100 firemen, and they knew all about it. And then the vast majority of the police, not 99% like the firemen, but I'd have to say about 70%, is a total shift from what we saw just 2 years ago when I was here on 9/11, and then before with the RNC, before that back in 2004 as well, just because people have had time to sit back. There's been some time. They've looked at the evidence. They heard us talk about, quote, conspiracy theories. They went and researched them, and they found out that something real was there. I mean, I was here 2 years ago telling the police and firemen, go to the web and type in Operation Northwoods, the official government plan to carry out 9/11 style attacks. And now I'm saying, check out Operation Northwoods, and they go, we know, we looked at it, they planned it. I mean, it was just, I'm blown away. This is a total shift. This was so historical. We went in Bullhorn, Spencer's office. We asked them to open another investigation. I mean, even people that don't believe it's an inside job believe there's a cover-up of something. They smell a rat, and they want a real independent investigation. And that's what, George, that's what you've been doing with one of the biggest radio programs in the country. You have been, you know, really having a real investigation on air. You've been fair from so many different sides. And that's why I always salute you, George. I really appreciate what you've done, and I've been honored to be part of this historical broadcast.
Well, you get some sleep. It's almost 4 o'clock in the morning out there in New York where you are, and I'm sure you're going to have another busy morning, Alex.
Yeah, it's like we've got to quit meeting like this. The good old days when I would just stay up.
You had normal hours.
Yeah. Last time I was at the Bilderberg Group up in Canada. Remember that?
Oh yeah. Where they took you away for a little bit.
Yeah, I was five times tireder then, but I've been out bullhorning all day. I've been marching for 3 days, and we're having a real breakthrough right now. This movement is a juggernaut of truth, as Charlie Sheen said at the 9/11 event out in L.A. a few months ago. It is a juggernaut. Its momentum is here. We've got the initiative, and we've got the higher ground, and we've got the truth, and we are going to get the truth, and we're going to defend this nation from enemies foreign and domestic, George.
All right, Alex. You take care. Alex's website's Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. Get some sleep, Alex.
Thank you, George.
Alex Jones. I'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to have open lines for you this hour. And the question to you is what do you believe? with regards to 9/11. What's your take? Now, also, just a few days ago, I had a chance to talk with Howard Bloom for a special we taped for a series of network stations on the 9/11 movement, what has happened after that horrible day, 2001. Howard Bloom was telling us where he was on that day 5 years ago.
I was in bed. I got a call from a friend in Washington. I tried to put the friend off because I wanted to sleep. The friend said, no, look out your window, planes, the World Trade Center. And I looked out my window, and I rushed to my roof, and what did I see? I saw one of the most beautiful, gorgeous days you have ever seen in your life, a sky of blue that was so perfect it was beyond belief, just enough clouds in the sky to make it apparent how wonderful the sunshine was. And I heard the screaming of sirens from the local fire station going down the alleys, that is, going down the streets, rushing toward the World Trade Center. And what did I see in the distance? The World Trade Center was like a wrapping of wax paper. You know, when you wrap a whole bunch of wax paper into a torch,
right,
and you light it. That's exactly what was happening to building number one. The day was screaming, this is the perfect day, this is the wonderful day, and there something was happening that was almost beyond belief. I went back on the roof later in the afternoon. All that was left was a giant cloud that covered all of lower Manhattan. All of lower Manhattan disappeared. So I watched this thing, George, and for a month I knew something was going on in my gut. I knew that something extremely powerful was going on in my gut, and I couldn't put words to it. I absolutely couldn't put words to it. But one of the things, it turns out a month later, when I was able to talk to a friend who was a magazine editor, and he talked about a story he was doing, a little bit of what was going on in my gut leaked out to me, and part of it was this. I wrote a manuscript in 1988 that tried to warn the West of the danger of militant Islam. That book was published in 1995, considerably revised. That's my first book, The Lucifer Principle, A Scientific Expedition into the Forces of History. It was meant in part as a warning. And I felt totally impotent that I had failed to get that warning across, because I was trying to warn of almost exactly this phenomenon. And we are still up against it today. And the most important thing about what has changed since 9/11 is that too little has changed.
And here we are now, Howard, 5 years later from that horrible day of 2001. We still have not found Osama bin Laden. We still have not solved many of the problems that led up to 9/11.
What we've done is we've turned against ourselves. We have come up with all kinds of theories about how we blew up the World Trade Center, how the Bush administration blew up the World Trade Center in order to make this a military dictatorship. Well, the Bush administration is doing some things that back in the old days of Richard Nixon, we called the imperial presidency. He is overriding the Constitution in many ways. But I'm sorry, there's a real enemy out there. And we don't understand that enemy. We don't understand how different his culture and his way of thinking is from ours. And when I say his, I'm referring to Osama bin Laden. I'm referring to the militarists who run Iran. I'm referring to the militants who run Hezbollah. Those militants said back in the 1980s, and it's quoted in the Lucifer Principle, this is Hezbollah in Lebanon that we're talking about. It's been in the news almost every day for the last month or two. The leader of Hezbollah said, don't you believe for a minute that what Hezbollah wants is an Islamic republic in just Lebanon. Hezbollah wants an Islamic republic of the world.
Well, we've got a lot of problems and a lot of work.
A lot of work to understand what we're up against.
Howard, there are a lot of moderate Muslims on this planet.
Yes, and they're squashed. Some of them are my best friends, and I'm not kidding when I say my best friends. One of them is a person, he's a Nobel Peace Prize nominee. He's the founder of the two leading journals on Islamic studies in the Islamic world. He's a former minister of education from Malaysia, and I dearly love this man. But this man spent 2 years in jail being tortured. He is a moderate, and he spent 2 years in jail being tortured. Naguib Mahfouz, who won a Nobel Prize, the first Islamic author to win a Nobel Prize, and who writes books that politically have nothing, they're not political books. They are absolutely not political books. For being too Western, he was stabbed 7 times in front of his apartment.
In the last 5 years, How have we changed? How have we changed as a nation?
We opened our eyes for a tiny moment to understanding Islam, and then we closed them again, and then we went back to sleep. You know how a person who's in depression picks at himself, picks until he makes scabs so that he can have more to pick on? That's what we've done. We've become too introverted when we should be extroverted. We've become too convinced that ours is the only kind of culture and every other culture is like ours. Islamic culture, militant Islamic culture, is not like ours, and Muhammad built militancy into the foundation of Islam. So when a friend like my friend tries to escape from that and tries to rally his friends around pluralism, tolerance, freedom of speech, the things that you and I believe in, human rights, he has serious problems. The people who are taking over his community and speaking on behalf, allegedly, of him are the people who are saying that Islam must be dominant and be the only accepted religion on the face of the planet. There are people like this, like my friend, I don't want to name him because I don't want to make him a target. But people like this we have to support with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our might.
If someone came up to you and said, Howard, we want you to solve this problem, this worldwide calamity that we're facing, how would you fix it?
I wouldn't know how to do it because my instant reaction would be wrong. And my instant reaction would be to use every bit of intelligence that we've got about Iran's nuclear facilities, since Iran has sworn that its goal is genocide and the annihilation of the State of Israel. That's genocide. It doesn't matter what people it's against or what country it's against. It is genocide. I would pinpoint those targets, and I would do everything in my power to take them out before the Iranians gain nuclear weaponry. And then I have to keep a very careful eye on Pakistan, because Pakistan has a nuclear arsenal that it's been building since 1998, and it openly declared when it tested the first Islamic bomb that this was an Islamic bomb. In other words, it belonged to the entire community of Islam. We are very, very lucky in that the head of Pakistan right now is Western.
Well, and you said a key phrase, right now. What happens
well,
if it falls into the wrong hands?
Well, these things change. Just as you're implying, George, these things change, and we have to be prepared for the options. We really seriously have to be prepared.
How do you, looking into your Howard Bloom crystal ball, see the next 10 years on this planet?
Unfortunately, I see the next 3 years as the years in which nuclear weapons are used for the first time. Islam is very different. Militant Islam is very different than the religions that you and I are accustomed to. It's not a religion. It's a complete system that includes a military system, a governmental system, and a legal system. It also includes laws of how you should urinate, how you should defecate, all kinds of minor details of personal life. And that religion, which wants to liberate you and me so we can live by the truth, by the laws of Allah himself, this religion will have nuclear weapons in its hands and will probably use them.
Now, when you said use nuclear weapons for the first time, you meant since 1945.
Yes, we were the ones who sinned by using nuclear weapons for the first time. Many of the sins that those of us who pick at ourselves point out are accurate, but they don't know the history of Islam.
And is there a way out here for us?
I think that the way out is preemptive war. That's a horrible thing to say.
You've never been this aggressive before.
No, but it's the only thing I can see, George. I see the nuclear option coming at us so fast.
You remember I told you a long time ago about my paper in school, and that was we need to take two possible directions. One is that we need to be the most technologically advanced country, keeping our thumb on all the other countries that were beginning to grow to keep technology, and I'm talking primarily about nuclear technology, to keep it away from them. And if that meant war, so be it. Or you let every nation develop as it may and then take your chances.
And I agree with you of the premise of your paper. Taking your chances is not an acceptable risk. Not when you have a country that builds into its constitution dominating the world with one government.
So that's Howard Bloom. We'll be back in a moment with your open line questions, your comments on 9/11 and also following the situation in Damascus, Syria, where gunmen apparently blew up a car outside the U.S. embassy and exchanged fire with Syrian guards in a very bold attack inside Damascus' diplomatic neighborhood. That's all we have right now. And welcome back to the open line portion of Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, and west of the Rockies you go. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the program.
Oh, am I on?
You sure
are. Oh, that's wonderful. George, thank you for such a great show tonight.
You're welcome.
You're really doing it. There's a couple of comments I'd like to make.
Sure.
Well, first of all, I think Howard is dealing with the effect and not the cause. You know,
mm-hmm.
because if you trace it back to who creates these groups, I loved what Alex Jones said about Al-Qaeda?
Al-Qaeda or whatever.
You know, I rented a movie from the video store this week called Why We Fight. Have you seen it?
I have not.
Well, Why We Fight uses an interesting expression. They call us the United States of amnesia.
Why?
Well, because we're forgetting. We're forgetting about how we create civil unrest and wars, how we instigate and create through CIA and other groups, and then we come in, you know? We forget that a lot of these groups are created, and if you trace it up and trace it up and trace it up, you'll get to the cause.
And they come back and bite us.
Yeah, because, you know, Howard is talking about the effect. What do we do now? But if you trace it back to who's behind it and what the cause is, then we might be getting someplace, because, you know, if it isn't Syria, you know, if it isn't Iran, it could be North Korea.
It seems like every group we help create cause, they come back and get us.
See, that's just it. We need to do something about the puppet masters, because it will be somebody else. You
yep.
know, it'll be China. It'll be North Korea. So in a sense, Howard is dealing with the effect, but I don't think the cause. So anyway, that film talks about how we got to where we are now.
So what do you think really happened?
Where?
Through the entire 9/11 scenario.
You know, that's interesting, George. As I listened to all of your speakers tonight, I kept thinking to myself, they're not mutually exclusive, the theories. It's all of the above.
Little pieces.
It's all of the above, and there's a blending. You know, and there are pieces of the puzzle, but it's really all of the above.
They may be all right, and they may be all wrong, but pieces can be the same.
Oh, I think if you bring in all of the elements, it's so complicated. It's as complicated as a bill in front of Congress that we're not supposed to understand.
I think you're right. Hey, thanks for the call.
Oh, George?
Yeah?
May I just mention something?
What?
I think it's really, really important. Is one thing that America, that we are asking ourselves as citizens, is what can we do? Well, two things came to mind tonight. Did you hear Keith Olbermann on MSNBC?
Not tonight.
Well, you might want to go and hear what he said, because he took a stand very similar to your guest tonight. In fact, he used the I word. He talked about impeachment, but he took a very strong stand against the government and the administration, and I think that if we agree with him, it would be good to back him up, because so few people in the media today are coming out like he did today.
And not a lot of people watch him either, you know.
Yeah, and so anyway, if you go to MSNBC, you might want to, you know, blog or comment or back him up. And the other thing I wanted to mention...
I got to run. I got too many calls.
Okay, bye.
Right, thanks. You had your time. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey.
Yes, sir.
Hey, George. I got one thing about this... this conspiracy. When that plane supposedly hit the side of that Pentagon there was a newscaster was out there, and he walked over and he said, this is the 747, and he walked over and he was showing the wheel of this thing, and he goes, wow, that's a pretty small wheel, the 747, and he was narrating it and talking about it, and he goes, wow, that must be a really small wheel, and he says it was about the size of a car. And if you ever seen a 747 or a 737 or a 737, those wheels are about the size of a truck.
Yeah,
okay?
They are huge. That's true.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, the CIA, the FBI went around to all the mini markets in that area. Now, the Pentagon's got more video cameras than L.A. County has around it, okay? Why would they need all the video cameras? Well, what they did is they took all of that around there. And if you've ever seen the size of a 747, well, what those planes did when they hit the side of those buildings on those Tower 1 and Tower 2, They took those out, okay? My belief is that when those planes or that cruise missile hit the side of that building, they took out that thing. This guy reported on a very small missile or a cruise missile that hit that thing. That's what hit it. The structural damage that they hit was a bomb or whatever it was. Now, the structural thing that always survives on every aircraft that has ever been damaged in a crash is, because I've flown Cessnas and I've flown a Cessna 152 and a few other things, is that when most planes crash, the thing that always survives is the most structural sound thing is the landing legs. And that's the structural thing that always holds up is the landing
legs. And I don't think we found that, did we, in this case?
No, they don't. And the NTSB never put that thing back together.
Well, that's true. I don't know if there's anything to put back together. I'll be back in a moment. Thanks for your call. Open lines continue on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Open lines now, right up to the top of the hour. Then that is it for tonight. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Take it away. George.
Yeah.
This is Steve. I met you once a long time ago when you was in Honolulu.
Oh, all right. Great. That was about a year and a half ago.
Yes.
How quickly time goes by, Steve, huh?
Right. And I sent you an email. I don't know if you ever got it or not.
Which one now?
I don't know how. I didn't give a real specific title, but it was regarding Paul Williams and my response to what Paul Williams was saying and my endorsement on support for Paul Williams. But anyway, maybe you'll remember later, I connected my tray and the whole thing along with Islam at the very end. But that's not what I really wanted to say. I'm just really concerned about how strong Alex Jones is fully blaming the Illuminati with the setting up of the...
Well, he believes it. That's his, his take.
No, and I agree with him, but I also believe that the highest levels of Islam are in battle and competing with the Illuminati. It's been going on ever since the Knights Templar and the Assassins.
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, and I think that a lot of the people make a mistake if they do not include bin Laden and al-Qaeda in this entire scenario, because whether they were hired guns, like I believe, or part of it in some other form or fashion, you have to look at what's going on here, and these people have been planning this for a long, long time.
Right. I would like to make a mention of something really important. There is a very, very prolific writer of Islam. His name is Maulana Muhammad Ali. Are you familiar with this writer?
I am not, no.
Okay,
honestly.
Well, I wrote this in the email. I gave you reference and the ISBN of several of his books. One of his books, he belongs to the Ahmadiyyan Society, which is an old society that goes way back, I would say back to as far as back as to the Assassins. If I'm not mistaken, he's connected with the Shiites. And one of his books is called The New World Order.
Where is he?
Oh, he's dead.
Oh, he's dead?
He's passed away. He's a very prolific writer.
Well, he's not going to help get on the show then, is he?
No. But his book is very important that you get a hold of his book, because it's out of print, but you can still get it through out-of-print sources. But, you know, like Amazon.com, et cetera.
Okay, let's not pitch his book now, but maybe there's somebody else that we can talk to who might share a similar view. Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Next up, first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Two things I want to mention here. First, Osama bin Laden is the most wanted terrorist in the world right now. How does a guy who is supposedly on kidney dialysis, who is an old man, evade the most expensive and most technologically advanced military in the world?
I can't answer that. That's a good question.
Okay. The other thing is that, George, you firmly believe in remote viewing.
Yes.
And the accuracy and precision of remote viewing. Would you be willing to ask people like Ed Dames and others to do an independent investigation on what exactly happened on the planes before they hit the towers.
I'm not sure they could do that, but I'm sure we can ask them.
Okay.
We can do that. But, again, I don't know if they're that accurate enough to be able to pinpoint that. Thanks for the call. East of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Good morning, George. It's an honor to speak to you.
Thank you.
Well, this is Kevin from Boston, and I would like to throw a little theory out to you.
All right. Different from what we've heard?
Similar to your second guest on 911.
All right.
When I first heard the guest speak about Israel, I said, that's kind of crazy. But then I thought, the first meeting after the U.S. invaded Iraq, where George Bush had a visit from Tony Blair, they both charted out one statement, and it was the roadmap to peace in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're speaking about Iraq, but they both used that same line. A year later, Tony Blair came over again, and he used that same line, roadmap to peace in Israel. But we have a war going on in Iraq. I think that the powers that be, not the powers that be that in Israel or over here, but the powers that be that are attempting to run the world, has looked at the U.S. and says, listen, you need a presence in the Middle East because war will break out. And this is, I think we only see the aftermath of everything. Nobody has the answers, like you say, but I think it's part of the puzzle. Now that we're in the Middle East, when Israel is attacked, it's much easier for us to shift gears over to Israel if we're already in the Middle East than if we're not.
Well, then, you know, there's no doubt, I think, going into Iraq was also to create a buffer zone. I mean, oil was a prime possibility. Trying to get Saddam out was another one. Trying to encircle and protect Israel was also, I think, a prime reason why we are there right now. And the containment with Syria will probably occur and Iran. And, I mean, those are the regions that they're after. And then they concentrate on North Korea. So I think part of your theory is probably pretty accurate. Let's go to our next wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hey, George, Ryan, currently rolling my wheels through Indiana.
Hello, Ryan. There you are. What's up?
I think the cause, the problem, the answer, it all stems from something your guest said earlier I think I overlooked severely. He said that the government just does not care.
And we've lost you on your phone. Try to get back to us. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there. Hello. Yep.
Hi, George.
Welcome to the show.
What's that?
Go ahead, sir.
I want to talk about Alex Jones. He's good at investigating things. He ought to investigate on trying to find bin Laden because he hasn't been around since November of 99 or December of 99. And all the films you see on TV about him, they always say, we think it's him. It looks like him. It's probably him. Nobody will ever say it's him. In case there's a congressional investigation, nobody's on the hook for it.
Do you think it is him?
I think he's been dead for a long time.
Well,
you tell me with all the intelligence we have, we can't find him?
I think we know where he is. I think he's still in Pakistan.
I bet you he ain't.
Well, I'm not sure we'll ever find out.
Yes, we will. But I'm not sure who has the body, whether Russia has his body or we have his body. But I tell you, he hasn't been around since about December of 99.
When are they going to wheel him out?
Well, that's a good question. But you can't blame everything on him if he's alive to deny it.
Yeah, and at the same time, they might not want to make a martyr of him.
Right, but I'm go back and look at all of his films that they showed on TV since 9/11. And they always say, we think it's him, it's probably him, it looks like him. They never say it's him.
That's a good point. All right. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Next up, let us go to our next wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Hello, George.
Hi.
Hey, good morning to you. This is Jerry in Spring. And I'm an ex-railroad person, been with the railroad all my life.
Yeah, what was your job out there, sir?
And I was in signals.
Okay.
And, started out with the Missouri Pacific, and then I quit for a while, and then went back hired on the GH&H Railroad.
We used to call that MOPAC.
Yes, sir, but yeah. GH&H Railroad was owned by the Katy and the Mop.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And that was the first railroad that was built in Texas ever. It started out building a railroad up to the brickyards up in Henderson, Texas, and they ran out of money, and the SP finished the line up there. That's where all the brick came from that built Galveston. But getting back to my theory, I worked on a lot of rail relays, and back in the 80s, they came out with this new stuff they call a butte well or a thermal well, and it would actually, you put this ribbon rail together with this molten iron, and it comes in a powder bag, and the bags weigh something like 25 and 30 pounds a piece. And you put this mold around there and put a couple of pieces of metal down the bottom and pour your powder on top, and then put a little bit of flash powder and set it off with a spark lighter. This stuff is hot. It goes up to 3,000 Fahrenheit. It just literally turns to molten metal, and then when it burns through the two pieces of metal in the bottom of the mold, it runs down there and melts the rail together.
Do you think this stuff is what was used?
Yes, sir, I do, because you can buy those bags. A lot of times those bags get out of date, and when they get out of date, they get a bad weld. So they can reorder the bags by itself. And I think that they had these bags of this powder probably contained in a drum or something, and it was put up close to this support beam that they claim these buildings had support beams that held the middle floors all the way to the top.
Well, they would have had to have had a couple of them all over the place, I guess, right?
Well, if you had just several of them, if you knock out the props, then all you got is concrete waiting on something that has no strength to it, because the gravity's trying to push it downward, and there's nothing there because there's a void there where it's burned out. And then they said they heard explosions, you know.
Yeah, a couple people reported that.
And the explosions could have been these floors busting through, in other words, breaking in half and going down little at a time, till finally there was enough there to it just all gave way.
So you think it was a controlled demolition too, then?
Well, no, you wouldn't call that stuff demolition. It don't explode. It burns very, very fast and very, very hot.
Okay, but you think somebody planted that stuff?
Yes, sir, I do. Because the powder is a mixture of powder and magnesium and iron, okay? And magnesium, once it starts burning, water will not put it out.
No,
that is
true.
Magnesium on fire and dropping in the water barrel, and it'll sit right there and smoke and burn without oxygen or anything, because it creates its own oxygen.
That's true. And what is it in water that is dangerous? Is it phosphorus?
Well, phosphorus, if you take it out of water, that's what it catches on fire.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, Jerry, thanks for your comments. We've got time for a few more calls here. It's a very rapid night. Wildcard Line, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there. Good morning.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Good, sir.
I guess, George, my dad worked with the CIA in the early 1950s, and he was stationed in Cairo, Egypt.
Okay. Was he an agent?
Yes, he was. He was an ex-Korean veteran who spoke Arabic. He was born in Jerusalem.
Ah, okay.
And he had told me stories as a kid that just blew my mind. All of them are coming true now. He told me that the Saudi Arabians and the Egyptians both work with Israel, and that they're tight with the Israeli government. And the reason is the CIA wants fanatics. They chose the Muslim Brotherhood of Egypt and the fanatics in Saudi Arabia because they know that they can. These people aren't involved in Bin Laden. These people, because they're closed-minded, they actually hate the rest of the majority of the Muslim world. For instance, if I were to go to Saudi Arabia, I'll be treated like dirt because I am an open-minded Muslim. I don't believe in militantism and fanaticism. You know, my wife doesn't wear a headdress,
And we're really treated like dirt if we were to go to Mecca and make the Hajj. It's a known fact that Saudi Arabia was saved by the Israeli army in the early 1960s. They sent paratroopers. It was a secret mission. And the United States also sent in troops. When the educated people of Saudi Arabia wanted to overthrow the kingdom, they got the go-ahead from Abdel Nasser of Egypt. America's, the CIA thwarted. My dad was there at the time. The CIA found this out. They sent troops. Israel sent troops to save Saudi Arabia's kingdom. This is a fact. It's documented. Even the king of Jordan has always worked with Israel. He even flew his plane directly to Israel to tell them they were going to be attacking 73. And these are supposed to be the enemies of Israel.
Yeah.
So these people, basically, it's not about Judaism. Judaism is a beautiful religion that I respect. It's not about Christianity. It's about fanaticism on all three religion sides. The evangelical Christians want it because they want Jesus to come back. The religious zealot Jews want their Messiah to come back. And the Muslim Brotherhood, who is Bin Laden, and these fanatics, they're less than probably 100,000 out of a billion, 500 million. They strictly believe that Israel should exist. See, they don't want, if you notice, they've never attacked Israel. Al-Qaeda, two guys, on September 11th, the pilots were from Egypt and Saudi Arabia, two countries that border Israel. They could have easily gotten an Egyptian airplane and attacked Israel. I mean, they fly to Egypt. Egypt flies to Israel all the time.
Well, you know, that's the latest threat, though. They're saying that they may hit Israel and some of the other Persian Gulf states. So let's keep our eyes on that. Thanks for the call. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, welcome, Boise. Yeah, a guy calling a little while ago about the plane going into the Pentagon. He's saying the landing gear would stay intact through 3,200 degrees, plane full of fuel, going 560 miles an hour into a solid brick wall. Nothing's going to be left. It incinerates everything. None of the things that I've heard tonight can be backed up with anything. It's speculation. It's conspiracy. And I think you ought to be ashamed of yourself, George.
I don't think so. I think part of this country is for people to be able to talk about their different views. And the fact that you hung up shows me what you're made of. Next up, let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
This is Kurt in Phoenix.
1 minute to go, Kurt.
Yes, I just had an idea about the Twin Towers. I just think if we allow the terrorists to change our skyline, and I think they're sort of winning, and I think that we need to put the Twin Towers back like they were exactly.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Well,
they've already
the
got their
design. Died, we can, like, name all the offices after them, and it'll be like a living, ongoing memorial, but I think that New York is not New York without those Twin Towers. They're going to put that big new thing up in there, and I think both the towers should be back like they were.
Okay,
and I think
well,
the president should think about that.
I don't know if they're going to change that at all. And, hey, thanks to all of you who participated in the program tonight and all the guests who came up with their different theories as well. David Hawkins had a very fascinating one when he believes some of this could have been a major insurance scam. Very, very different. I had not heard that one before. Well, tomorrow we slip back into a more paranormal type formats, so that's what we shall do. In the meantime, let's keep our eyes on what's going on at the U.S. Embassy in Damascus, where a car bomb apparently exploded and Egyptian soldiers had to take some drastic measures against some of those perpetrators. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ian Punnett, Ross Mitchell, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.